Okay, let's begin proceedings, and hopefully the latecomers who are braving the rain outside, some of you have made it, the rest of them hopefully will make it through. This is our first Hellenic Observatory research seminar for the academic year, so we welcome you to this event. And it's a great pleasure that we've got Rebecca Pervi with us here tonight. Rebecca, apart from being a colleague, is also a friend, who's an associate professor in international relations at the University of Macedonia in Thessaloniki. She specializes in international relations and foreign policy analysis and works more specifically on small states in international relations, and all things to do with small states in international relations. She's obviously published widely in the appropriate journals and volumes. She chairs the Small States and World Politics Standing Section within the European International Studies Association, and I've had the opportunity to participate in that particular group. She is now, has completed this work, which I'll say something about in a second, and she's now involved on a new project, which is looking at the current state of Greek-American relations, funded by the US State Department's IVLP Impact Award Scheme. Could you please tell me what IVLP stands for?
International Visitors Leadership Program.
Fantastic. So the International Visitors Leadership Program, working on Greek-American relations, so we look forward to the outcome of that research. In the meantime... In the meantime, Rebecca has just finished another piece of research, which was funded by the Leventis Foundation through the AG Leventis Research Innovation Program in Cyprus, here at the Hellenic Observatory at the LSE. And the project was on the Republic of Cyprus and the EU sanctions on Russia, navigating, shelter-seeking, and political shocks. So there's a theoretical dimension to this, but it's also something that is very topical, and it relates to, I guess, how a small state maneuvers in a sort of bigger international sea, and what effects it's following certain trends of bigger states has on its own foreign policy and regional politics. So Rebecca, welcome. Thank you very much for coming to speak to us this evening. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Spiros. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening, despite the rain. I'm grateful to the Hellenic Observatory for the invitation, and I'm also thankful to the Leventis Foundation for supporting our project. I need to thank my colleagues in this project, Professor Ioannis Konstantinidis, and also our research assistant, Stavros Piperidis, and also many thanks to Spiros for chairing the seminar today. I'm going to stand in order to see the slides. In my classes, I encourage my students, and Antonis can prove it, to use the bus stop analogy to explain the research projects at the bus stop. So I decided to put myself in this test today. Our starting point is the special relationship that Cyprus has with both the EU and Russia. So, after the invasion of Ukraine, the EU decides to sanction Russia. However, the Republic of Cyprus has special diplomatic, economic, and societal ties with Russia. At the same time, the EU is an important shelter for the Republic of Cyprus, while it is also perceived as Russia's Trojan horse within the Union. So the sanctions decision pose a serious challenge to the Republic of Cyprus foreign policy. And our main research question is, was the ROC entrapped within its European Union shelter, or was emancipated, found an opportunity to reshape its foreign policy and break with the past? And we are particularly interested to see how was this choice perceived by foreign policy and general elites and the public opinion. As the bus is approaching, let me say some things about the theoretical framework. Our research is situated at the intersection of small state studies and foreign policy analysis. We draw on small state-centered theory. Very briefly, centered theory suggests that in order to address their vulnerabilities, small states seek economic, diplomatic, societal shelter in great powers and international or regional organization. And due to power asymmetries, they face the abandonment or entrapment dilemma within such multilateral arrangements. So sheltering comes with a cost in the small state's autonomy. And for these reasons, sometimes sheltered decisions may create divisions on the domestic front. This is why we are interested in exploring the perceptions of public opinion and the elites. According to political shock studies, sometimes unexpected and undesirable events with a dramatic effect on the impacted state might create windows of opportunities. And this is where the idea about the emancipation comes from. In a sentence and in a foreign policy analysis framework, we are interested in a second image reversed. We want to investigate how an international event, the invasion of Ukraine, and then the sanctions imposed by Cyprus shelter, the EU, impacted the domestic arrangements in Cyprus. So, I think I explained the rationale of our research. I'm going to look to Rock's foreign policy before the invasion in order to understand the background, and then the challenges after the invasion of Ukraine. We will look at the elite perceptions and the public opinion perspectives, new challenges because of, and this is a spoiler, divisions within the Cypriot society. And as our project was policy oriented, some policy proposals in the end. Rock's foreign policy before Ukraine. I think that it's commonly accepted now that during the last decade we witness a serious shift in the Rock's foreign policy. The Republic of Cyprus moves from a monothematic foreign policy focused only on the Cyprus question to a more multidimensional foreign policy, a more diversified. There are some reasons for this. The key influences is the EU presidency in 2012, which was an eye-opening experience for the Cypriots' foreign policy elites. They were able to see how small states can influence EU politics and policies. Also, a process of Europeanization during the economic crisis, even it was forced Europeanization. The hydrocarbons discovery was an important event that raised Cyprus' geopolitical profile, but also raised Cyprus' ambitions in the region. And opened a window of opportunity for regional cooperation, which started from the energy sector that had a spillover effect, And always Turkey's assertiveness in the region, it's not accidental that the relations between Cyprus, Israel, Cyprus and Israel, Cyprus and Egypt improved when the relations between Israel and Turkey, Egypt and Turkey deteriorated. So here at the Hellenic Observatory in 2014, the then President of the Republic of Cyprus, Nikos Anastasiadis, outlined 5 foreign policy goals for Cyprus, which was first the resolution of the Cyprus problem, second the protection of the newly discovered natural resources, third active participation in the EU, especially in the security sector as Cyprus is a non-allied, third the promotion of peace and stability in the Eastern Mediterranean, and fifth, and in my opinion most important goal, was strengthening ties with the United States, the United Kingdom, Israel, while maintaining good relations with Russia and Arab states. Here we can see the foundations of a multi-vector foreign policy for Cyprus. Let's say a few words for each of the major actors. I already said that the EU is an important shelter for the Republic of Cyprus. The Republic of Cyprus joined the EU mainly for security reasons, and this was very different, a very different motivation from the other states which joined the EU in 2004. Cyprus wanted to gain support for the Cyprus question, and there was also an existential motivation, but very different from the other states from Eastern Europe. During the economic crisis, the EU member state provided a safety net, but this came with a cost of some autonomy. And I also think, and this was also a finding in our research project, there is a widespread agreement, at least among the elites, that the EU has enlarged the Republic of Cyprus action space. We know that the Republic of Cyprus is seen as a bridge builder from other states in the region, a bridge builder between Lebanon or Egypt or Israel and the EU. And Cyprus tried to connect the evolution, the development of the EU-Turkey relations with the Cyprus question with mixed results. And also another characteristic of the ROC-EU relationship is a credibility crisis that occurred due to the strong ties between Russia and Cyprus. I think I talked about the regional role and the status of upgrade in the region. I think the most important development during the last decade is the relationship between the Republic of Cyprus and the US. We all know that the relations were historically tense. They have enormously improved during the last decade, and we have some key milestones. A high-profile visit by Joe Biden in 2014, the EastMed Act in 2019, the lifting of the US arms embargo, the creation of the Cyclops Security Center, and recently, in June 2024, the launch of a strategic dialogue. Many of these initiatives are related or connected to a process of de-Russification in the island. There was a prerequisite, for example, for the lifting of the US arms embargo related to Cyprus relations with Russia, and also many references to the East Med Act. And if we look at the statement of the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Kombos, during the launch of the strategic dialogue, he recognizes that the Republic of Cyprus had to make those steps in order to elevate its status in the eyes of the US. The Russia relationship, we all know the strong ties, the economic investments. Limassol is known as Limassol Grant. Revenues from tourism, spiritual ties, historical links, many leaders in Ofakel, for example, have studied in Moscow. Arms trade, Russia was an important arms provider for Cyprus, of course, due to the US arms embargo. And also Russia was important to the Republic of Cyprus for its support at the UN Security Council. Equally, Russia wanted rock support within the EU. There are many people in Cyprus who believe that the relationship had already started to deteriorate even before the EU sanctions on Russia. And there is some evidence. Russia's improved relations with Turkey, allegations of corruption linked to the passport, Golden Passport program, and also Western pressures for de-Russification. How the situation has changed after the invasion of Ukraine? We suggest that the invasion of Ukraine and the Western reaction that followed was a political shock for the Europe, for two different reasons. The first one was the return to power politics and revisionism in Europe. Being occupied, having a powerful neighbor but had recently challenged its sovereignty, being non-allied, put the Republic of Cyprus in an uncomfortable or difficult position. The second reason on which we focus is the ROC's economic, diplomatic, military, societal links with Russia, which were disrupted by the European Union's decision to impose sanctions and severe ties with Russia at the institution and member state level. The most important development was that the ROC's multi-vector foreign policy and its dual-track approach to Russia and the West was undermined. And also, Russia did not receive this very well. The Russian ambassador in Cyprus stated that you shot yourselves in the foot, and just a couple of weeks ago, Russia listed both Greece and Cyprus as hostile states. What do people in Cyprus believe about this developments? With regard to the elite's perceptions, we conducted 35 semi-structured interviews with diplomats, academics, ministers, ex-ministers, members of the House of Representatives, and journalists, And we tried to balance our sample as much as possible. So, with regard to rocks roll in the region, we have widespread agreement, I would say, that the Republic of Cyprus plays or can play the role of a bridge builder in the Eastern Mediterranean. And they see the role of a bridge builder as a role suitable for small states, and the Republic of Cyprus, who has good relation with almost everyone in the region, apart from Turkey, obviously, can play this role. And it also can play this role because it has a good understanding of the region. But we have some differences. There are the optimists who believe that Cyprus really punches above its weight with its multi-vector foreign policy, the trilaterals. It leverages its EU membership and strategic position. These are more or less aligned with the formal, the government's position. We have the skeptics, who recognize that Cyprus has made some progress, but this progress is seen as opportunistic, short-term, and unsustainable because of inadequate foreign policy infrastructure. And we have a smaller group, the pessimists, who think that the power asymmetry with Turkey is detrimental, and the Republic of Cyprus is too small to be able to make a difference. With regard to the role of the EU for Cyprus, there is a widespread agreement that the EU membership provided a shelter for Cyprus, even among the EU skeptics. And they all recognize that the European Union can be a diplomatic enabler for Cyprus in the region, although they are disappointed with the EU's position vis-a-vis Turkey. They recognize that there is a credibility deficit, but not only for Russia, Cyprus' relations with Russia, but also because of Cyprus' monothematic focus on Turkey within the EU. I think it's justified, but they believe that Greece and France are Cyprus' best friends within the EU. With regard to the EU sanctions on Russia, we also found that there is a widespread agreement that the Republic of Cyprus did not have many options. It had to follow the EU, it had to show solidarity. However, people believe that there are different reasons for which Cyprus should follow the EU decision. Some draw a parallel between the Ukraine invasion and Cyprus' 1974 experience, while others believe that this was out of pragmatic necessity, a need to align with the EU for broader strategic benefits. With regard to future relations with Russia, we found that there is a clear division among the elites, and this division is also associated with ideological orientation. There is a group who believes that the derussification was already underway and that sanctions only accelerated this process. They believe that Cyprus belongs to the West or should belong to the West, and the invasion of Ukraine and the sanctions that followed opened a window of opportunity that accelerated the process of derussification. As one of the of our interviewees put it, we need a restart to our economic and political system without the Russians. We need to distance ourselves from Russia. This group is identified with the emancipation side. There is another group, I would say, in terms of age, older, and also leaning towards the left, who are concerned over long-term impact on Cyprus-Russia economic and political ties, and who believe that Cyprus should not fall for anti-Russia hysteria. We have a similar division with regard to the US. The first group is quite optimistic about the future relationship between the United States and Cyprus, because they believe that Cyprus status has upgraded in the eyes of the US, and the relations are really improved due to Cyprus' role in regional conflicts. They refer via Marcia, humanitarian corridor, Cyprus' reorientation of its foreign policy, and also because of the island's geographic position. However, the skeptics raise concerns. They believe that sooner or later the US will betray Cyprus, that Cyprus cannot has not the capability to sustain this relationship, and that more or less the relationship is dependent on Turkey-US relations. Again, we have this generational divide between younger elites who see opportunity and older elites who distrust US intentions. Let's proceed with the public opinion perspectives. Just a comment for our methodology. We conducted a survey with 505 participants. It was an online survey run by an agency in Cyprus, and we followed the Eurobarometer methodology for this survey. We were interested to assess the views the public opinion with regard to major actors in the region and beyond the Cyprus status. So, again, as among the elites, Greece and France are considered Cyprus' best friends. Mixed reviews on Russia. Russia got 38% positive views. And also, in my view, a very good result for the United States, 56% positive views. And we have an 8% difference between the United States and Russia. If we consider the traditional friendship towards Russia and the traditional hostility towards the US in Cyprus, at least our survey shows that the US has made serious gains during the last decade. The public opinion favors further strengthening of ties with the European Union, but also with Russia and the US. And I'll come to this a little bit later. The dominant emotion is fear, which can be justified by their perception that global conflicts will increase and the role of international law will be weakened and regional conflicts deteriorate Cyprus' position. With regard to our main topic, the war in Ukraine and EU, the majority believes that Cyprus was entrapped within the European Union. They highly support humanitarian aid to Ukraine, but are reluctant towards military aid and sanctions on Russia. And only 38% agree that Cyprus' participation in the EU is a diplomatic asset. If we discuss the findings of both our elites, of the interviews with the elites and our survey, we find that there are some new challenges for Cyprus and its foreign policy. There is a rift between the elites and public opinion. A divergence in views on EU sanctions against Russia and their long-term impact. There is public skepticism about distancing from Russia. It's obvious that public opinion favors a dual-track approach. I would say is towards the West, but with Russia. And it doesn't see the European Union as a center, as an enabler for Cyprus in the region, something that is widely accepted in among the elites. And the majority favors a more inclusive center-seeking strategy. High approval ratings for France, Greece, Egypt, for partnerships with France, Greece, Egypt support this view, and also for more cooperation with the EU, Russia, and the US. Also, as I said before, regional and global crises are not perceived as opportunities. And as our project was policy, I forgot about this. There is an uncertainty over how Cyprus will handle its relations with Russia in the future, and there is much uncertainty over Russia's position over the Cyprus question within the UN Security Council, which remains very important for Cyprus. We didn't discuss the US elections during our research project, but I think that nowadays we need to think about the US election and what will happen on the Ukraine front after them, because small states and also, most importantly, small states like Greece or Cyprus that shifted their foreign policy needs to be prepared. So, as our project was policy oriented, some key policy proposals, we believe that the ROC should take measures to enhance domestic unity. Domestic divisions constitute a vulnerability that can be exploited by malign actors, and I think the Republic of Cyprus must anticipate such risks, especially as tensions with Russia, but not only with Russia, as turbulence in the Middle East persists. It also needs to capitalize on the orientation of its policy and EU shelter. Cyprus shifted its foreign policy, disrupted its ties with an important actor in diplomatic terms, in economic terms. So, in a sense, it sacrificed a relationship. So, it must capitalize on its position and be more active, more entrepreneurial within the European Union, cooperate more with France and Greece and other Mediterranean states. And we see the 2026 presidency as an EU presidency, as an opportunity for Cyprus to further elevate its status within the Union. It should also focus on regional security. Regional initiatives enjoy widespread support. Also, the public and the elites are very keen on collaborating more with Greece, Egypt, France, so we could see an East Med security quartet, maybe in terms of non-formal cooperation, or a security and cooperation mechanism in the Eastern Mediterranean. Last but not least, it needs to invest in foreign policy capabilities in financial terms, but also we suggest a cultural shift in how foreign policy is crafted. Small states, due to their resources limitations, leverage universities, think tanks, expertise for policy innovation, have a more inclusive foreign policy making structures. They involve civil society, and in this way they also raise public awareness, and it's a way to also build trust with public opinion and increase unity for foreign policy goals. I know this was a policy oriented project, but I cannot resist to say two words with regard to theoretical consideration and future research. I think that we see the limits of multi-vector foreign policy in the current international system. Multi-vector foreign policy gained much support among many small states, not only Cyprus, but Cyprus proves that such a policy has its limitations because of the high polarization. Also, I think that it's important to think about the costs of shelter-seeking and how small states balance between the cost of shelter-seeking and the opportunities of shelter-seeking, and what happens when the cost comes as a political shock or creates divisions within a small state. Because if the competition between great powers increases, maybe political shocks will increase too, and small states will need to make tough decisions. And I think that we used to see the EU's relationship with the member states through the Europeanization lens. What will happen if we connect Europeanization and shelter theory and put asymmetry of power in the discussion? Thank you very much.
Rebecca, thank you very much. I just from my own personal perspective, as somebody who works and teaches in the field of international relations and foreign policy, I have to say that this is a rare example of a work done by a group of Greek academics or Greek academics working in the field of IR that actually manages to be ambitious in combining theory with foreign policy. And we were talking about this before the seminar, and I know very few of you here deal with the foreign policy dimension of politics. There are a few people here that do. But it's also, it's very, very rare to find research of this sort, which has theoretical ambition and is as rigorous as possible in applying certain concepts and theories to a very specific problem and carried out in a very specific way. Now, we may disagree with what you say. We may have issue with some of the things you put forward. But I think it's important to note from my point of view that this is the kind of work that should be done rather than the usual sort of more historical narrative work that tends to dominate the field of IR and foreign policy in the Greek domain anyway. Having said that, there's a lot of things here that I'm sure other people would like to ask you about as well. And I've got a number of questions which I'd like to ask you. But let me open it up for general discussion, and then maybe we'll come back to some of my details. Rebecca knows some of you, but she may not know all of you. So could you please introduce yourself when you ask your question?
Fernando Casey. I was associated with the HO in the past, but I think I still have a good association, mainly from a Cyprus connection originally, which is one more reason why I came here. I didn't just come because it was Cyprus, but nobody had seen one another for a long time, so it's very nice to see him again. And I emphasize, I'm not downplaying what he was saying, but it gave us a double opportunity. So it was very happy to be able to come. I want to ask two questions, but I think I'm going to, if I'm allowed to ask the second one later, can I ask the first one now only? I'm an economist, sort of, to start off with. One of the things I was terribly conscious about Cyprus, which I've seen lots of times, is not just Limassol, Grad, and what goes on there, but the enormous business services, financial services industry in Cyprus, and its role in establishing connections not only to Russia, but around places like Serbia as well, but also other countries. So that there was an enormous economic pressure to maintain certain kinds of relationships. There was a whole industry of business services, quite apart from a whole industry of tourism, which seems to me to be likely to be heavily impacted by changes. And when you talk to elites, I wondered to what extent, A, you talk to elites out of that kind of sector, so business elites, but also if you were looking at what individuals thought, what about the employees in that sector as well? Because they're the kind of people who are going to be the last to want to change their attitudes, unless you can offer them something very substantial in return. Not quite sure where the return is going to be.
Thank you very much. Can I just add a little footnote to that? Because one of the questions I wanted to ask you, you may not be able to answer that right now, is what was or what is the economic cost of economic sanctions on Russia? We know that economic sanctions are a political tool. We know that in your particular study, Cyprus may have pursued the path of imposing economic sanctions because it wanted to align itself with the European Union because of various multi-vector aspects to its foreign policy, etc., etc. But there is an economic cost. And this ties in a sense with Bernard's question. Do we have evidence yet of what that economic cost might be? Because if we do, we might be able to tell how things may change.
They used to do states and markets at LSE in international relations many years ago. Ali did this, you see, years ago as well. Yes, so I mean, this is important. It's important in the way that you introduced it. First of all, when you said here are people who are looking at a different way, a different form of international relations. Certainly, they're kind of in my past, I remember that going. LSE alone.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your questions. I think there's another working paper on Cyprus from economics. Am I right?
Yes, I was about to mention. So we published a study on the economic effects of that.
Yeah, and I haven't read it carefully, I must admit, but I think that their conclusion is that the economic shock is not that severe, and I think that this is also the formal position. With regard to your very interesting question with regard to the elites' views, it depends on who you are asking. And I found some very, very interesting views. And also, let me say that I hope we are under some house rules here. There was some sense of appropriateness in the interviews with regard to the Russia and the Russian economic interests in the islands. In the island, and you had to ask again and again to take something substantial from the interviewee. So one interviewee said, at the end of the day, the Americans do not spend money in our restaurants. So although he was very rational in the discussion and not pro-Russian, but when I tried to find something more substantial and pressurized a little bit more, this was his response. But also there were other views. For example, people believe that the Russians who live in Limassol, for example, are responsible for the increase in prices in real estate, rents, their lifestyle harms the island in these terms, in economic security. They also believe that their economic system and political system was, let me say, unhealthy because of the Russians and the Russian influence. So if we need some, their view was that we need something more sustainable, and to build something more sustainable, we need to distance ourselves from the Russians. Also, with regard to the economic shock, they tried to replace Russians with Ukrainians and also Russians with the Israelis or the Emiratis in terms of tourism. So it's not clear what the shock was because others invested or went to Cyprus for vacation, etc.
Okay.
But let me also add that if Cyprus, my perception is that if the rock was free to choose, it wouldn't impose such severe sanctions.
Okay.
Thanks, Rebecca. Let me underscore what Spiros has said in terms of the depth of the research with the survey evidence. It's fascinating. I think Cyprus is one of these cases where such a small place has such interesting political and international relations questions for so long that sadly it's failed. I wonder if perhaps I could just go a little bit further and disaggregate Cyprus a little more. You've been talking about Cyprus policy and the responses to it. Perhaps there's two parts to the question, or two different questions. One is that the extent to which this kind of dilemma appeared and was significant or not in the presidential election, so amongst the party system, because obviously this is a non-party president, and I wonder how sanctions on Russia and Ukraine played out in that respect. To what extent is it something which was a source of explicit party conflict? And perhaps related to that is to pick up your point about small states, but particularly this small state foreign policy making. As you say, the resources invested in policy making are no doubt very limited within the foreign policy of Cyprus. Let me be slightly facetious and say that it's probably made by five consenting adults in a closed room. And so, related to that, then, is perhaps how much of this stance is ad personam, individual related, how far is it shared more generally. If Christodoulidis had not won the presidential election, would he be making a very different presentation here? So perhaps it's the shallowness of, or the limited resources of policy making, and how far the foreign policy stance at this particular time is actually embedded more deeply.
Again, can I add a footnote to that? Because there's another way of sort of cutting the, slicing the cake here, cutting the pie. So you divided, in your findings, you divided the elites into optimists, skeptics, and pessimists. And my question is related to what Kevin was saying in a slightly different way. If you've done that because it sounds nice, or you've done it because it reflects trends, could you replace those three terms with Akel and whichever other political parties are involved and say, well, you know what, the pessimists are all from here, the optimists are all from there, and the skeptics are all from here. So I've used these terms as descriptors of political parties and political tendencies.
I have a very short answer in your question. The groups are across the political spectrum. And this was very, very interesting for us.
So you're saying that the optimists were from a diverse range of political
parties? Yes. And the pessimists too. They were pessimists who are associated with this. And I think that the ideological identification is more obvious in terms of the relationship with the US, where this is closer to the West and Akel closer to Russia, and we have the parties in the center who suffer, in my view, for a sense of appropriateness. Elites who identify themselves with the center were hard to identify where they belong in the US-Russia orientation spectrum. Not because they do not have an opinion, but they, in my view, because they didn't want to reveal their position. And
in the presidential election?
Yeah, the presidential election. There is a constance in the Cypriot foreign policy. From Makarios to Christodoulidis, there is an aspiration to every Cypriot president, to Christofias, to Vasiliou, to Anastasiadis, for Cyprus to play a regional role. you find this bridge builder notion in their speeches. Even when the circumstances do not encourage such a role, they envision this bridge builder role, and it's very interesting. In a different lecture I said that this has become part of Cyprus' national autobiography. And I think that if we compare the agendas of the different presidents, the bridge builder role is there. There is also a sense of appropriateness, at least in, among the dominant candidates, with regard to the invasion of Ukraine. I don't think that if we had Averov instead of Christofolidis, the policy would be different. And some of my the interviewees pointed out that even among people in Akel are people who are more prone to towards the West, and this is also a generational thing. Because those who studied in the USSR are not in the party anymore. Some of them are not alive anymore, to be honest. So even Akel is changing. They are, of course, they are not like pro-US, but they do not object towards closer relations. So, if to put it differently, I think that the idea that there is a window of opportunity open for Cyprus in the region is commonly accepted, but there is a disagreement over how capable Cyprus is to harness this opportunity. This was my question.
Thanks. I'm not a foreign policy expert, just disclosure, but I would like to pursue a bit like that, you know, the framing, the shelter theory. And I wanted to mention Europeanization, but in the last bullet point in your presentation was Europeanization. So I'm going to end up with a kind of empirical question, but let me very quickly tell you this. So obviously, there's a cost of autonomy if you shelter. It wouldn't make sense otherwise. But in the case of the EU, it is not that, because on the one hand, we have mechanisms of policy learning, uploading, downloading stuff, so Europeanization, broadly speaking. And on the other hand, we actually have formal participation in decision making. You mentioned the presidency, the past presidency, the forthcoming. So it's not exactly shelter. I mean, you know, sheltering, but also you have the keys. Well, not that the presidency gives you the keys, but it has some influence. You have a veto point on some decisions. So in that sense, I'm not quite sure why. I mean, I can understand the sheltering as an analogy, but I don't see why that frame would have an advantage over an advantage of Europeanization or other things that surely are there in foreign policy analysis, which is about sort of formal participation in the Security Council or whatever. So that was the starting point. But then the empirical question is, this is not about sheltering from an enemy, this is about sheltering from a friend. You know, the people who spend money in the restaurants, they inflate the house prices, they pay for golden visas and so forth. So basically, that was in a sense a historical moment for Cyprus to take a decision whether they want to continue with that and have you know, the help they get for financially or as a regional player that you mentioned in response to Kevin, or to actually reframe how they internationalize the issue of the Turkish invasion into the island, because it does look very similar with the Russian invasion into the Russian-speaking population in Ukraine. So they could have taken the opportunity, re-internationalized the issue, and become not only a follower, sheltered in the EU, a follower of the EU foreign policy on Russia, but also, if you want, a leader, an advocate, saying, like, we know this stuff, we can tell you how to do it. So I wonder whether that came up at all, either in the elites interviews that you had, or from knowledge that you have about the policy-making process of the five men behind closed doors, or it just, you know, it is not in the psyche of foreign policy-making in Cyprus to ask this question.
Thank you very much for such interesting questions from an economist.
Surprise, surprise. Counterintuitive.
So, for a small state scholar, if there are small state scholars, the EU is like Orwell's farm. All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. So I do not think that Cyprus has the same leverage as Germany in the council, or even if we go to the one state, one vote in the council and the veto power, etc., etc. Even before this, they do not have the same resources in terms of human resources, financial resources, information, foreign policy infrastructure. So even the European Union is not equal to its member states. The center idea looks like a safety net, for example, during the economic crisis. The European Union provided shelter to Greece, to Ireland, to Cyprus, Portugal, and in this sense was a shelter. Or in societal terms, you referred to Europeanization and the download process. This, for a small state scholar, this is a kind of societal center. Because you download, for example, norms or law you are not able to produce yourself. So someone else provide you with these tools. And this is the idea of the shelter. With regard to the Russia's revisionism and Turkey's revisionism, the analogy of the invasions, officially, the Republic of Cyprus tried to make this analogy, but I think without much success, because of this credibility crisis, looked like an opportunistic move. However, I think that they managed to shape the dialogue at the domestic scene. This was the dominant narrative during the very first days of the invasion of Ukraine domestically. And this was very, very important.
So this is the drawing the parallel with the invasion?
Yeah, the parallel. Drawing the parallel.
Angelos first, then.
Hi, thanks very much. I have a question about the I just wanted to ask, it's a more of a conceptual question about the concept of small states as such. And I'm just thinking about here this, I'm not an expert in the literature, but the very little I have read of the literature, actually, particularly in perspective of concepts such as foreign policy change or foreign policy contestation, is that I have basically read both things, right? So in a way, small states, there's one view that's basically says that small states are small, therefore pretty much everyone is united about what they have to do. It's pretty much, you know, as you said, it's a very small place, everybody knows each other, and also everybody has a kind of a very basic common understanding of risk, threat, etc. So you shouldn't be seeing lots of contestation inside small states, because basically they live in a very, it's a very dangerous world, and kind of everybody sticks together. Kind of that's like the Peter Katzenstein view about the Western European countries and how kind of they formulated kind of their political economy and international political economy model. And there's another argument that basically says that small states, especially places such as Cyprus, precisely because they are small and especially they tend to be on fault lines, it means that they're also, they contest much more the geopolitical orientation, precisely because they're so small and nimble, you know, it takes one election change and then, you know, basically can shift. So there's another argument that says the smaller the country, actually, the more contestation we expect inside. So I kind of struggle to see where Cyprus falls within those, obviously both of those things are probably a bit stereotypes, but I struggle to see what do we take about small state foreign policy, if such a thing exists, from the case of Cyprus. So what does it tell us? Is this a place, well, Cyprus also suffers from stereotypes, right? Is this a place where everybody's kind of in it together? Or is this a place, which is also an impression we get a lot from the party contestation, that is deeply divided ideologically, where basically everybody argues all the time about it. So what do we take about small states as a theory of small states? What does Cyprus tell us?
Thank you for the question, Angelos. And let me say that the small state group is a huge group with many differences. And I usually tell that smallness is a continuum. And we had like weak small states and strong small states. And because at least in Europe, the literature is dominated by offers from strong small states by Scandinavians, and Scandinavians are the leaders in small state literature, in at least in Europe. So they project this idea of unity and the united small state, and small states are united because, and this unity is the byproduct of small state vulnerability, and the society comes together, and this of course has its roots in corporatism and in the societal arrangements in those countries. So I think what we can quite safely say is that the unity and polarization in terms of foreign policy are closely associated to the political system. Mm-hmm. If we have a consensual political system, we have this alignment behind the government in foreign policy goals. If we have a polarized political system, like in Greece, for example, we have months of contestation. So this is closely connected to the nature of the political system, I think.
That's great. That's an answer very close to my research interest. But then I wonder, what is Cyprus? Because it's a big ideological spread. As far as I know, again, I'm pretty much a foreigner as far as Cyprus is concerned. What I know is that there's a pretty much big ideological spread in the Cyprus political party system. Historically, its foreign policy and geopolitical orientation has been very contested. At the same time, it is, as a Greek, you always perceive Cyprus as a country that also projects a strong sense of unity, at least on the basics.
Because of their political system.
Okay.
And look at the how Cyprus confronted the economic crisis and the memorandum, and how Greece dealt with the economic crisis and the memorandum. They didn't have elections and snap elections, etc., etc., because of their political system.
If it's interesting to see that, I suppose, as you say, it's something about the nature of the threat. So you were alluding to the work of people like Peter Katzenstein, sorry, about the vulnerabilities of small states. When the small state faces what is perceived as an existential threat, something which is applicable to the entire state, then it's levers or leverages domestic consensus and unity. Cyprus in 1974 was relatively united, possibly in the economic crisis, well, certainly more in the economic crisis than more united than Greece and some of the other states. So there's something about the nature of Russia and sanctions which is different from that. So we seem to have in the equation not only the question of a consociation or consensus party system or not, but also something in the nature of the external threat and what they're responding to.
And also I want to add something, that the most important dividing line in Cypriot society and among Cypriot elites, at least in the past, was their position on the Cyprus issue.
Yes.
So I think that they were more or less united in everything else apart from this.
And your elites, sorry, yeah.
Last point, there's another question.
Yes.
So
it just flows from this. So, but therefore, because you said the parties don't really explain variation as such, but did your findings when it came to Russia, did it align along this dividing line, their position on the side? Was this perhaps
no.
some more? Not even that, okay, all right.
Mentioned earlier on about you may well be right about ACEL members or supporters perhaps veering towards the West. But what I wanted to say, and you might agree with me, because you also mentioned about pessimists, and there's a considerable percentage of pessimists that various research you've done. And I wonder if primarily those people are ACEL members or supporters. As you're well aware, the elections, they enjoy 30%+, whether it's presidential or parliamentary elections. So so I wonder if that's mainly due to ACEL supporters, because despite the dissolution of the so-called USSR, ACEL is basically, for nostalgic reasons, still looks upon Russia as sort of, and they still refer, a lot of them still refer to it as Mother Russia, as they did to it even during the days of the so-called USSR, as Mother Russia. So I wonder if that's primarily the reason, if still some of them still think that the best interest of Cyprus is served if they veer towards the West, they, because of this nostalgia and because of they look at Russia as a lesser evil, since they were not involved with the USA, with the invasion of Cyprus. And it would appear that Cyprus is merely a pawn to the big nations and big superpowers, irrespective of how it's in a high position, say for example, in terms of a regional decisions that are taken, it's still a pawn. And at the end of the day, Cyprus is at the mercy of the interests, say the Western imperialist powers at the end of the day, because the invasion of Cyprus was on the cards virtually from the time when Lyndon B. Johnson, in sometime June 1964, he wanted Papandreou, the then Prime Minister, he wanted him to plan for the separation of Cyprus. So it really is at the mercy of what's happening, and in many ways it's a back to the future. If you think back to Richard the First, the Franks.
Okay, let's not go back to Richard the First and the Franks.
So
we went back to 1974. We'll take, answer that question in a second, but Bernard, you said you had a second question. Can we, do you want to ask your second question? Well, we're running out of time and you're not going to get another chance.
I'm not going to get an answer, but it just suddenly came up again in that last round of questions about what on earth actually was a small state, which started to get bigger as we went along, which was a problem, because I hadn't been certain that Greece was going to count as one or not. I was thinking more about the sort of the multi-vector policy which you talked about earlier on, and I thought about a small state which Cyprus counts as being, but then I thought of India, which is a very big one, which has actually got lots of the same issues which are coming up. So some of that didn't appear to be even a small state problem. I think some cans were sort of opened up over there when one talked about sort of social consensuses in societies. In any case, then you sort of think about, if you look across Europe, more or less consensual societies, and whether those are breaking apart. I mean, I sort of also come from Germany, and I'm terribly conscious of, you know, sort of the rebuild of the Weimar society in a big, once upon a time, you know, sort of when I was a graduate student, we were talking about consensual Germany, talking about consensual Austria, if we want some more to this. So I'm concerned about all of that.
Okay, we've been to the Rich the First, we've come to the Weimar Republic. We'll stop there with the questions. Whatever you have a final say.
Thank you very much for your questions. I met pessimists across the political spectrum. But what you described, I found such perceptions among older generations within ACEL. Younger people within the ACEL who studied in Cyprus or in Greece or in the UK hold different perceptions. So there is a generational divide there, I think, and it's quite obvious in many different areas. But I think what is also widespread among ACEL elites is more their disappointment of the Cypriot political system and the European political system, and they talk about this anti-Russia hysteria and also a complaint about double standards. Why do we sanction Russia and we do not sanction Turkey, for example. With regard to what a small state is, do we have 3 hours?
No.
This is quite complicated, and there are around 6 different schools of thought about what a small state is. And let me say that small state is the weaker part in an asymmetrical relation. And if I were in Greece, I would say small power, not small state. So everyone is more confident to be a small power and not a small state. But with regard to the multi-vector and foreign policy, the multi-vector foreign policy concept actually comes from Russia. I think the first one who conceptualized foreign policy as multi-vector foreign policy, if I'm not wrong, was Medvedev. And then was a widespread foreign policy among the Central Asian states who want to keep close relations with Russia, but they didn't want to be patronized by Russia. And that's why they diversified their foreign policy. So it's quite close to hedging in Southeast.
We used to have this thing called non-aligned. I mean, you see, that was like India and Cyprus, you know, sort of from the early days of that. So there was a bloc which viewed themselves, I would have associated multi-vector policy simply with going back that far.
Yeah.
if wants to.
It looked like a good option, and Kenneth Walls would say that small states live frivolous lives, but I think that these are perilous times for small states. And let's close with this.
We'll close with that. Thank you very much. Thank you all very much for coming.